space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon! I thought go upside down today for just, yeah, just some variation.
Upside down dragon. Got
I met Dragon Dog on the weekend for Halloween. That was fucking brilliant. I was like, ah, my kindred.
And what did the dog say?
Which
So we're here to talk about the latest episode of Lower Decks, the best exotic nanite hotel, which led us down the rabbit hole to Evolution from TNG. And yeah, if for whatever reason you're not in a good mood today, hopefully we can have a bit of a fun time, but that's all we're gonna say on that subject, which I'm not even gonna.
I'm just gonna say I've been really looking forward to Retrek today. This Trek is the cure for all ills, and that's all I'm gonna say, because if this helps you guys, hopefully it does too, because it's really helpful to me.
But first, Elliot's got some Trek news.
Should we start by wishing number one happy birthday?
Happy birthday,
Rebecca's 52nd birthday.
There we go. I can't believe
it when I saw how old she was. It was like,
no, never. I was going to say, I can't believe we didn't get invited to the party again.
Yeah. I think she's on the same bat's blood as her husband, Jerry O'Connell's on. Like, there's some possibly sort of weird potion that he must be taking, because they both look great.
Yeah, they do.
But we did have some Lower Decks news this week.
Go on.
Polar Lights are releasing the USS Cerritos as a plastic model kit.
Ooh. There we go.
And really special, the first 500 have been done with the same box art that Rutherford uses in the Doppler one, Duplas episode, when he's building the Cerritos.
The Quark one.
So it's the brand name on it is Quark. It's the same box art.
Can I also, I can actually compliment your Trek news for Lower Decks, because Rutherford himself, whose character, like, actor name escapes me, but he did an interview recently, and he said, like, as much as the series has come to the end, none of us want to feel like this is us done with Star Trek. We all want to come back. We'd love to do a special or appear in other things, so to do with Trek. So
yeah,
just the fact that Will's there amongst the crew, and if kind of one of the other shows wouldn't do another crossover or something, it's really nice to hear that they're excited. So
yeah, I don't think we've seen the end of it.
I don't. There's rumors that, like, you've had Mike McMahon, is it Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah. Been saying that they'd be up for coming back to do a movie every year. And I'd be quite happy if we got 90 minutes. So if I knew every year I was getting 90 minutes, maybe 2 hour movie of Lower Decks every year, I'd be well up for that.
Oh, hell yeah. And I think it's like, it's very much they've done a sort of similar model. I know they're making series again for South Park, but for a while it seemed like they were just doing special.
Yeah, I was just going to say that seems to come up on Paramount Plus an awful lot, doesn't it?
I'd be quite happy with that.
Yeah, well, there's no reason they can't do specials every now and again.
But what we can say about the model kit that's only got 500... I know for a fact that there's only 499 available, because I've ordered one of them.
Oh, you surprised me, Elliot.
There we go. And I'm sure we'll see it on Retrek Model Studios once you're up and running again.
Oh, that one's going to be good.
So, the best exotic nanite hotel.
Indeed. I'm just going to put a pitch for this one. I kind of felt about this, and it kind of was only on rewatch I really noticed it, because I felt I just something about it. Like, it was okay, but not one of my favorites. I think this reads like a 90s sitcom. It could have been an episode of Friends, and I'm going to evidence this as it goes on. Like, the plots were very kind of like, you've got the girlfriend who didn't think she was broken up with, she was very kind of Friends-esque.
And
the guy who kind of keeps on just wildly getting sent into danger while the other two are safe, so like leading to a confrontation, which seems like something Ross would have got like mixed up. It just felt like an episode of Friends to me.
Yeah, I suppose Jennifer's a bit like Janice in this episode.
Like, it does come out, Jennifer is doing it deliberately. She does know they're broken up. She's just making her uncomfortable because she hasn't told her that they're broken up.
Yeah, and that's like Phoebe might do.
Well, no, Janice used to do that to Chandler as well. Yeah, like, there's one where she says she's got a baby and she pretends that he's the father, even though they broke up much longer ago. So, yeah. Yeah, very good. So yeah, it's like an episode.
Yeah, and it's very light on sci-fi and very kind of like there's almost no back references to previous. There's a few.
Not a lot.
It was lighter than usual.
It was a lot lighter than usual. It was like, I know we're into five seasons and we covered a lot of other Trek anyway, but it was actually quite hard to think of another episode to cover to go along with this one.
There was only one, really.
For some reason, it won't come to mind. I knew there was one, and then when Elliot said it, it's like, oh, of course it's that one. It just wouldn't come to my mind. Yeah, perfect.
I mean, it's probably because it's not the most memorable episode, but we'll get there in the second half of the show. So the Cerritos is going to the Cosmic Duchess, which is basically, they describe it as sort of a cosmic cruise ship, and it looks like a starbase, and it's got different worlds on it, different biospheres. Yeah. It's got everything.
It specifically, to me, looked like the Kelvin timeline in the third film where they showed
the end.
The hubs on there look very
Yorktown.
Yeah. But very much remind me of that. I think, like, which you don't get too many Kelvin kind of
Similar sort of idea. Yeah. And yeah, it's the sort of thing you can see. I mean, I suppose it's an extrapolation of the modern day cruise ships. Like, I've never been on that sort of cruise, but I'm told it's pretty much like you're in a city and it's just floating. There's like, there's a shopping mall, there's restaurants, there's bars,
there's casinos, there's theaters.
So this is
hookers,
like
the cocaine. Sorry, was that only on the cruise ship I was on?
No, that's all cruise ships.
Okay.
International waters, the stuff you can get away with is really quite... but yeah, so the reason they're there is because it's been infested by nanites. And yeah, that's the setup of the episode. Most of the crew are going to deal with that, except Boimler. And I love the fact that Ransom even phrases it as, I've got a side quest for you.
they mentioned side quest. And when you see later on in the episode, just to link these two together, when you see the nanite thing, it looks like a D20. How there wasn't a D&D joke? How there wasn't more of a D&D joke in here, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's very on Lower Decks.
Subtle, yeah.
Like, Mariner knows exactly what shape it is, don't she, straight away? She goes,
yes, she gives the actual name.
Yeah.
Which nobody knows. I've just got it in my notes as a D20, so...
Like, that's what you need. You need Mariner to say that, and then Boimler to come in with, like, oh, it looks just like a D20. Like, perfect. It just seems like it's right there. That, it's not often Lower Decks misses opportunities, but I think they did a few in this one. I'm sorry,
I think you've got a very good point there. I mean, clearly they made it that shape as a reference to a D20, because we know how geeky these people are. Yeah. And I mean that in a good way. Yeah. But it does seem a little bit, I mean, they could have even put numbers on it and had some sort of reason why they'd done it.
And all through the episode, and it might have been their way of trying to communicate. And like all the way through it, you could have had, because you already got the side quest and the D20, you could have had other D&D kind of little references in there. Yeah, I don't know. Just, feels like they didn't build up the way they usually do the episode.
Yeah, true. It does feel more sort of
renewed.
phoning it in.
This was the episode where they found out.
Right, fine. We're just going to rewrite Friends into a fucking Star Trek.
Yeah, that's it. While they're at next week, there's going to be a story about, I'm trying to think of a famous Friends storyline now. I can't even think of one.
It's going to be a Cheers Bar Wars episode next week.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, we'll have that. Yeah. So then the other thread of it is Jennifer turns up, who we've not seen for ages, and it becomes apparent Mariner's not seen her for ages either. But she acts initially as though they're still a couple, and this makes Mariner a bit uneasy at first. Yeah.
And we've also got alongside this a Rutherford and Tendy renewal, which
that's really cool
introduction. It was just really like, it wasn't really overplayed, I didn't need it to be, but they made a couple nice references and it just felt cute to see them on screen together. I need them to get together before the end of the series. I just need it.
Well, I don't think they will. I think they'll just leave them both in the drain zone.
No, just, they've got to see it. Sorry, they have.
There'll be loads of fan fiction out there for you if they don't actually do it in the show.
yeah, out there. I'm not writing it at all. Like, it's this Dector Squee is, I don't know who that is.
And so Boimler's mission then. This, the guy who's lost his hands, and he sort of gives Boimler the warning, like, no, they throw you into all the danger.
All the danger. Yeah, it made me pick up the rock in the pool of piranhas.
And Boimler's excited. See, I love the reference to, do we get to wear the black bodysuits? Which we've seen a few times, but not that, most famously, I think, in Chain of Command, you get the card and whatnot, wear them.
We've seen it a couple of times in Lower Decks. Mm.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's nothing particularly bad in this episode. I don't mean to sound like too negative, but it's just like, again, like with this, it's just like different setups of him going into danger and making it, or thing it's safe. It just, I don't know. It just didn't quite get there for me. It was okay. It was fine. It's just like, to use a phrase from the kids, it was mid-trek.
Mid. Sorry. No, but mid, yeah, but mid kind of means bad.
No, mid means it's middle of the road. It's not particularly bad.
Yeah.
But in the fact that it's not particularly bad, it's almost like it's not as interesting. Because even
That's what I mean.
Okay,
I feel
it's funny.
I feel like mid is used in a derogatory sense, even though it literally means mid.
Yeah.
But I feel like they use it to mean bad.
I think
I think it was originally used in that way, but I think you guys might be right. It's become more that.
I think it has.
For me, it was just, it was average Trek. It was okay. Yeah. It was funny, but it wasn't like, wow. I didn't really remember it afterwards that much.
Yeah, it's not a massive episode. It's okay, which makes you wonder when Lower Decks does things like this, because they are very conscious of what they're doing. If there's going to be loads of stuff in this episode that later on, sort of episode 9 and 10 of this season, we're going to go, it was from there, it was from there.
Maybe.
It'd be just typical for them to do something like that. And like, so where have all the references gone that we normally have?
Yeah, I mean,
so
not
maybe.
Jim. After you, Jim.
I was just going to say, maybe we'll see the Glumpus again then, because that's what we decide we're calling the Nanites.
Well, that's what Rutherford called it.
And like, there was kind of a few little guest aliens here and there. I didn't particularly recognise any of them. Were they from some episode?
The reason you won't have recognised them is because this is the first time we have seen on screen a Gallimite. But
yeah, I recognise the name.
Captain Baudet from DS9 was referenced no end of times as a lover of both Daxes, I believe, at some point. And I have to say, it's nice to see him on screen, but I wanted the whole face, like the whole head, to be transparent, not just a little bit.
Yeah,
I was a bit disappointed by that. The Captain Baudet in my head...
I'd like a crystal skull with a brain inside.
Yeah.
Don't mention crystal skull. I'm not over that Indiana Jones film.
Yeah. So nice to see them, but I would have preferred either go all out or not at all. Like, it, but that's just a personal thing.
But they do get an extra point. They get an extra point for me because I thought even the aliens didn't seem like to be any back references, which is a nice, easy way of including back references. But yeah, if I thought I recognized the name, so thank you. Yeah, that one I will give them was a nice touch.
Yeah, I recognize the girl.
I agree with you.
I don't know who the race were who can't stand people eating or drinking.
No,
but they look kind of familiar. I feel like that's a new one.
Yeah, if anyone watching knows, just bang it in the comments and let us know.
They weren't from one of the, again, Kelvin movies. They look kind of familiar.
Again, not that I'm aware of. Maybe they're a little one that we've seen in a background or something, and they've decided to flesh them out a little bit. I don't know. And then there's also this Krog character, which is another reference to Friends, because that's Ross's action figure when he's trying to get Ben to not play with Barbie. Oh, no, it isn't. It's Chandler. When Chandler's trying to impress by show off his babysitting skills with the triplets, he says, and when the babies wake up, they can meet Krog, and he's got this action figure called Krog. So I think you're right. I think, yeah, this is
and
to the Friends verse.
When they were going down the river, you saw that monkey called Marcel go past them. I thought
but that could have been a reference to the movie Outbreak. So, of course, could have been. And when Boimler, first of all, the you've got to go up the dangerous mountain, but then he's got to ski down it, and you find out it's called Coward's Gulch, which I thought was pretty funny.
That's nice.
Like, yeah, that's very on the nose, but
I think that is a homage to those kind of classic jokes. Like, it's a very Police Squad, and kind of I think that was a deliberate. I'll give him that one. I like that.
And he accidentally grabs the guy's genitals as he's going down because they're on his back.
Where else would they be?
Which is obviously a bit of a piss take on the Star Trek 6 where he's pulled through in his knee. It's not like...
That's what I thought of,
Yep.
And he accidentally kind of tips off the Admiral, somebody who knows the Admiral. So that's the thing, is they're looking for this Admiral who's gone into hiding.
Which seemed to me a very Apocalypse Now mix.
Yes, that's
the Rogue Admirals, which you get quite a lot in Star Trek, so it's a kind of double hit.
When they get there, it is the setup is Apocalypse Now, and funnily enough, me and Elliot were talking about that the other day, weren't we? So
we were having a bit of a chat about Grando.
Yeah, and it is very much that.
We just come out of the Christopher Reeves movie. So yeah, you've got stock.
I still want to see that. That looks great.
It's good. It's definitely worth seeing. It's it feels weirdly incomplete, possibly because of the runtime. Like, it's only just over an hour and a half, but they'll sort of make reference to things and not follow up on them
and not tell you how they got over that problem.
Yeah, like the main. Obviously, the main thrust of it is about his accident and how he copes with it and what he did afterwards. And it's, all that's incredible and everything. But I think because they've so tightly focused it on that, it feels like there's other strands that are not kind of picked up. But
we get a bit on a Stitch in Time, though. Please, come on.
You mean Somewhere in Time?
Somewhere in Time, pardon.
Well, they sort of say, and then he did some films which didn't do well.
That was a great film.
It was a great film, but nobody went to see it.
But you get like 5-10 seconds. They don't say it wasn't a great film, they say it didn't do any more blockbusters.
I mean, in all fairness, like, that was one which back in the day you used to be able to find an audience in TV a bit easier. So if it didn't make it in the cinema, like quite a few of Kevin Smith's films did poorly in the cinema, but did great on home video. I think that was one of those. So it's a bit of a shame because I think it's wrong to judge it by today's standards. It did make it, probably its money back in the long run.
We will check the box office of it before the end of the show.
I'm not arguing the box office was shit. I'm just saying afterwards, I bet it made
I think it's become beloved. I mean, I think there's a there's a convention every year where they go to the place that it was filmed and they all dress up in the, you know, so it's certainly got its fans.
Do they try and cover up anything from the present day? Because that will break the spell and you won't be able to.
I am not sure. I've never been to one of these conventions. But that's a good example of something that like they kind of gloss over because they, like Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour fell in love and got together during that film, and he ultimately broke it off because his ex-partner had found out she was pregnant and he went back to her. None of that mentioned whatsoever. You know, so yeah, anyway, that's but it is still a brilliant film to watch, and it tells the story that you're there to watch and everything, and it's all very, you know, inspirational and everything. But, yeah. Anyway. Yes,
Reprex, review of Super Slash Man.
Super Slash Man, the Christopher Reeve story. I would recommend it, but don't expect to find out anything you didn't already know, is what I would say. But back to Lower Decks, and then we'll do our review of Heretic, which we also saw. So yes, Apocalypse Now, and yeah, they go down the lazy river. He has to go into the cave, which, as you said, he's hitting this beat again of you do the dangerous things. I like the conceit that the Admiral went AWOL because he gets rubbish missions like milking space whales.
Yeah,
have to go. Is that a Gormaganda or is that a Galaxy's Child type thing? And I love that. I like it when they actually mentioned the episode. Yeah,
all of them, all the space whales.
Oh, but yeah. it's like they.
The thing is, we've done Galaxy's, like, Galaxy's Child is a reference to one that we could have done, but we have done Galaxy's Child.
Oh, I mean, they also mentioned Dixon Hill in here, but like, yeah. No, that, yours was a better fit by far.
We've gone with the obvious one.
It was. I do love that thing of when they name the episode name in it, Galaxy's Child type deal. So you have to in world imagine that's what just everyone refers it to it as. Yeah. That's what the mission report was called, or the kind of like the TED Talk at Starfleet Academy.
Well, it does make you wonder, how Lower Decks references these by the episode title we know. If, when they're writing the captain's log for the mission report, if they do have to come up with a name of it. so you've got Picard there at the end of this mission, and he's going, and he's done his captain's logs, and he's going, fuck's sake, what the fuck am I going to call this one?
No, no. You see, I think he writes the captain's logs, and then later it is the Picard talks at Starfleet Academy, and he named all his adventures, and, you know, maybe Geordi and Data come in with it. Like, they all take turns to do them. It's like, as I say, it's the Starfleet Academy version.
I just like to think that the captains have got to sit there thinking of a name for all the missions.
It goes on the subject line of the email.
Yeah, once they put all the logs together and the mission's over, they've got to send, right, this was all that mission, anything that happened, and they've got to title it for what the mission's about.
Picard's got really pissed off with the cadets coming up to him when he's trying to enjoy his dinner, so he's like, fuck it, right, I'll do the Starfleet Academy circuit, just do a talk about it, then you don't have to bother me. It's on the whatever the internet is.
It probably explains, though, why in TOS era they're very Shakespearean about some of the names and all that, and referencing Roman stuff, because they were new to all this stuff. But by the time it gets to Picard's time, he's there. Oh, for fuck's sake, Galaxy's Child. I'm not calling it the giant suckling whale.
And I can't call it Geordi Gets Turned Down, because I've already used that 3 times for different missions.
Also, if you're going for the old school title, it would be The Whale Which Suckles Deepest, Suckles Best, or something, you know, it'd be very overly wordy.
Yeah. Yeah, Picard's, I can't believe Captain Kirk used all the Shakespearean references. That's my thing. Anyway, so, yeah, they admit that Boimler, they were giving him a chance to succeed, which he does because he rescues everybody. And Jennifer and Mariner, well, Jennifer admits that she's been winding Mariner up. She didn't break up with her properly. And they reach sort of something of an understanding.
And Jennifer and Mariner have about three goodbye, because they settle it when they're talking and she reveals it. Mm. Then she goes, I'm sorry that I didn't say this, that, and the other. Brilliant. They settle it there. And then they have a goodbye. Like, it seemed like three ways of doing the same thing. It wasn't like
pretty much.
You've got 25, 21 minutes, however long these episodes are.
Yeah, it's like Mariner obviously really liked Jennifer, but she can't forgive her for not trusting her.
Yeah, I don't think Mariner was particularly unreasonable in that. And I don't think either was Jennifer, but I don't think they needed...
Yeah, but it was that Mariner just needed one person to trust in her and believe her, and Jennifer, even though she was in a relationship, wouldn't believe her.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Mariner was particularly unreasonable, if I'm honest.
Yeah. No, I don't.
No. Yeah. And, the twist then, if you like, is when they disable the nanites, it turns out there's a little teeny tiny Intrepid class ship that's caught in there, and they've been trying to gather all the stuff they need to open up a dimensional portal
to get
so
up.
which relates
to Elliot's suggestion that might be the theme of the series.
Yeah,
it's certainly looking that way.
I think that we got that on straight away, that it's going to be all about dimensional portals. And I still stick to my thing that I think it's going to be Folians, even though we've not seen Folians yet in this season. Mm. I'm still sticking to Folians are going to be behind it.
You know what?
I think it's going to be the giant hand.
I'm going to put it out there because it's got to be right sometime. It's going to be the Iconians.
Iconians, we've got the Tholians or Giant Hand.
You're going Giant Hand.
Giant God Hand.
The Lower Decks writers...
Is that Apollo?
That was Apollo. Yeah. The Lower Decks writers know that everyone always thinks it's Iconians, so I wouldn't put it past them to actually make it Iconians in the final series.
It'd be a nice wrap-up. It'd be nice, like, the final biggest in-joke to the fans. You guessed this all along, it is this time.
It is.
Yeah. And there's a fun little bit with the Admiral where they go, oh, you're in my universe as well, but there you want to milk space whales. Whoa, that's not what I'm doing this
week.
Yeah. and like what? So this guy just comes back and they go, yeah, we'll forgive you. It's like, what? There's no repercussions.
Well, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I think, like, why it was a covert mission. It's because he's gone AWOL. I just want to get him back and doing his job. Because they don't want all the press and it coming out that an Admiral has gone AWOL, because that looks really bad for them.
Very Star Trek not to embarrass him, which is...
And you've got to keep an eye on Admirals, because they have a tendency to go off the rails, particularly in this time period. So
yeah, it's happened a lot.
Yeah, I think even if an Admiral just resigns from Starfleet and it's all cordial and everything, you probably send a squad just to make sure they're not doing anything too crazy. Yeah. That about wraps that one up. I think I'm broadly on board with what with Squeeze take on it. I thought it was fine. I don't think it was the greatest episode.
I enjoyed
I
enjoyed watching it because I love Lower Decks. I've watched it several times this week because I always do.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be one of my rush back to episodes.
No, and I think we've shown we're 28 minutes into the podcast. We've pretty much covered it all, and we spent 10 minutes of that talking about Christopher Reeve. So, there isn't a lot to chew on in this episode.
No, that's what I think I missed. I think with us talking about it, Delane,
I do think it's nice that she gets a signed photo of Krog.
Yes, that is nice.
Although the only thing was, like, They have a Krog thing, and it was kind of fun. I go, it's like, no, I'm just a real good big fan of Krog. And then, but when she meets him, I saw we didn't see Krog previously, did we?
No, I don't think
so. It felt like the reveal that he was into Vulcan meditation. It was like, Oh, well, that's fine, but I don't know. Now, why wouldn't Aaron, like, to us, why wouldn't he be? Do you know what I mean? It's like,
well, I was trying to think what species he is and all that, but he obviously, I'm not sure what species he's meant to be.
No.
I feel like that bit at the end was fine, but for that to really land, you had to know him to appear much wilder.
It felt underdeveloped, yeah.
You need to set up for the land.
It feels like it's a species that we should know that aren't really known for being wild-mannered, that we've maybe seen them as wild animals or beasts or something. Maybe in TOS, but we're just not putting the pieces together who it is.
I feel like you've got to establish it in episode, like some kind of allusion in episode. Like that, I mean, I would have happily taken that over the fourth or fifth goodbye that Mariner says to Becky, wherever.
Well, according to Memory Alpha, he is from an unspecified species, and that's the only episode he's ever appeared in. So. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe he's gonna be. Maybe we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe Krog's gonna become a thing.
It was angular, wasn't he? I wonder if he's because Folians are out angular from what we saw.
Here we go.
I wonder if it's Folians. If it's a Folian that's sort of like got on top of his anger and he's cooled down and gone chill.
Maybe.
He's gone solid rock.
It's not lupus. It's never lupus.
So, yeah, anyway, that's that episode. And because of nanites, we went back to Evolution, which is, weirdly, it's the season 3 premiere of TNG, which speaks a lot to this period of TV, because now a season premiere would do something big.
It'd be a massive episode.
Yeah, it'd be a notable episode. It'd either be wrapping up a cliffhanger or it'd be sort of a statement of intent for the season. Yeah.
You would have made more fuss about Pulaski leaving and Crusher being back.
Yeah.
Like, I know they use it in the plot, but they don't really have any fan.
The first episode back of your third season. And it's a Wesley episode. Not that I have a problem with Wesley, but it's just an odd choice.
With Dr. Kelso from Scrubs, though. I mean, great actor, yes, very true. Underused here.
It's just, I mean, I think it speaks to the way TV was done then. There was just, we need 26 scripts. That one's done first. Make that one.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot of thought to the structure of the season or anything like that.
You've got a third season. You're on for half the year. And you just put out your episodes. And some of it, I can't think how. I'm trying to. Season 3 ends with Best of Both Worlds, doesn't it?
Yes. So they got the season finales and openers sorted after this. This is the last time.
Like, it makes you wonder if there's like the budget thing, because I've mentioned that before with how TV used to be, that you have episodes that you know are going to cost you a lot of money because there's more effects. You have to build new shit. You need new models, new sets building, and then you have your episodes like. Apart from that egg, which I can't imagine cost a lot to build.
The egg.
They're literally on one backdrop. They've got one set piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Or one of space with the star, and that's it.
Can I ask also, I think whoever wrote this episode might have been eating a boiled egg while they did it, because you've got the egg references all throughout. And then later on, when I'm going to say Dr. Kelso is talking to Troy, he goes like, oh, you think you've cracked the hard surface? It's like, the way that this egg obsessed in some way? But he's not referencing the thing. He's referencing himself. And it doesn't seem to be a play on words or anything. It's not like he's calling back to that. It's just another random egg like reference, and this whole episode just felt like you guys say it's like there are 26 episodes to make. There was a decent plot, I think, within this, just very badly.
It's a good first draft. It's a very interesting concept that they're working on.
Yeah, but you need the nanites a bit earlier to have causing havoc.
Yeah, you need
Wesley to come forward a bit earlier, and then you can have a bit more fun with the ship nearly falling apart before you get a resolution. You could have built Dr. Kelso's character up a lot more. He was very interesting once he starts talking about baseball, which made me think of Sisko, obviously. But I would like to have had him more passionate earlier, not this whole thing of like, oh no, he's pretending like he doesn't care. Well, why? I want to see him care, because it then matters more when he goes.
Yeah, it's all a bit. And it starts with Wesley forgetting his alarm. Now, I do enjoy when Wesley goes up to the bridge because Riker just like points at him. As he goes over there.
Riker was great at winding him up.
he's doing it in a nice way, so you can tell he's grinning, but he's like, yeah, Wesley,
he was like the fun uncle mentor, whereas Worf was the
But you've also got the thing that Riker will be aware that Wesley has probably stayed up all night studying as well. He's doing his shifts plus his studying.
Yeah, so you need to get on top of this, but I get it. You know, you got your
And to be fair, Riker, who's meant to be sort of looking after him as a mentor and in charge of his study periods along with his work rota, should probably be making him reduce some of his study time on the night if he's sleeping in not regular staying
probably.
Up. Because he knows that he's not staying up partying, although possibly he is staying up shagging, as we find out at the end of the episode. But that's a different matter.
That is because there is that bit where Wesley's sort of talking to Beverly. Sorry, he's talking to, and she's like, "Oh well, you know, you must be out having fun." And Wesley just basically says to his mom, "No, I don't have fun." And it's like,
it's when Crusher goes to Wesley. It's like, or to Dr. Kelso with Wesley there. It's like, I missed about 2 inches. And Wesley's going, well, that girl didn't last night. Ew! Oh, sorry. I'm having no fun whatsoever.
Yeah, because she said to Picard, doesn't she? She's like, has he ever been in love? And Picard should have said, well, yes, actually, with this weird shape-shifting thing that... You know, last year it was a whole thing. Last year there were these fish people, and then there was this shapeshifter. It was the weirdest thing.
And I feel like this was a thing of the time, whereas like the dialogue wasn't very like. I think now people talking to you generally, it's kind of like realistic dialogue. Whereas it kind of like she talks in a way that no one does. Like going, like, no, tell me about him. Who's he? It's like no one talks like that. Just what's he up to now? What's he into? Like you wouldn't ask of your son, even if you hadn't seen him for a year. Who is he now? Like what's he like? You know, she doesn't.
Yeah, exactly, I know what you mean. Something like that.
It's weird. It's very formal. It's very much of its periods because, like, what would this be? 89, 90. It's
I think we're in 1988 when it started. So 87
when it started. So
87. Sorry, yeah, you're right.
88, 89. So this is probably 89.
Yeah, you're right.
Written probably in 88.
And also, talking of things not being sort of fully worked out by this point, Beverly talks about the food slot rather than the replicator.
Now, I actually think this is actually bad writing as opposed to...
Okay. Yeah,
I'm sure we've had replicators
because we've had replicators.
I thought we had.
We've had replicators for a long time, and I actually think this is just really bad writing by somebody, and it's just not being picked up in post-production or anything.
So they didn't time again, to our point.
I think it's literally just been, that'll do. We're concentrating money on this one. Our time is going into these episodes. Just get on with it. And I think it's just, I honestly think this is not a case of, they weren't sure what things were because we've got over that from TOS. This is a case of bad writing and not being picked up on. And I think it's possibly also a case of Crusher's been out of it for a year. First episode back, she's probably not even picked up on. She probably should have corrected. No, we're meant to call them replicators, but she's been out of it for a year, so she's just following the script.
Maybe though, in universe, Starfleet Medical's actually really run down and they only have food slots. They don't have replicators and she just hasn't got out of the habit yet.
No, because this is still replicating over and over.
Okay.
But you've got to also bear in mind that as much as the writers are like having produced 22 episodes, so the actors, so probably she was like, oh, it's not even worth, like, I don't care, food slots, that's fine.
No, this is...
No, but like, I wonder, like you were saying, that she would have usually picked them up. I think maybe they were so overworked on some of the episodes. Like Brent Spiner said, it's like all he could do was really say, like, as long as I had a take on what I was doing in that episode, that's it. That's all I had time for.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It might have been one of those situations with the
film. But this is what I'm saying is this is early in her coming back, so she's maybe not picked up on.
No, I know what you're saying, but I'm saying the other option is she just didn't have the time or the.
Yeah,
like energy to go. See, oh, you use the wrong term, you know.
See, I don't.
It's one of those, I think.
If this were late in the season, I'd agree with you. This is your first episode. You should be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on this one. Everyone should be bringing their A game.
Which is why I think her breakthrough
she's probably just come off the set of the Great Muppet Caper. She's in a rush, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Right then. So we get this bit where red alert, because this is the thing that we find out the nanites are interfering and making the ship do weird things. But I'm going to give them this one. I don't know if this was planned, but it's the first episode of the season and it teases the Borg. And they say red alert, there's a Borg ship. And then, of course, the season finale is the actual Borg attack. So it does give a little bit of a bookend to the season. I don't feel like it belongs in this episode. And I think if you were going to do that, you should have done a whole episode about we think it's a Borg attack and it turns out not to be or something like that. So I'm giving them a little bit of credit for that. But I suspect it may have just been a happy accident.
Let's also remember that Borg episodes at this time are hugely expensive TV.
Yeah.
Your Borg episodes probably take up your budget of 4 or 5 normal episodes. So you end up with a lot of episodes like this that don't get the care that they deserve.
True.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit, I wanted to pick you guys' brains on this because they say, oh, we've not had a computer issue like this for 79 years. And I feel like we must have. Like, we must have had
I assume,
a computer go down. The only thing that
seems weird is that in the last two series they didn't. But I thought it was a sort of in-joke too. In the original series you had loads, so you couldn't say there wasn't anything to that. So in the time between the shows. But there must have been the first two series.
Like, I was wondering if this was referring to the animated series, one where the computer, the practical
maybe joker. It could be, yeah. But I mean, because I'm thinking of, like, there's that episode where is it where Silence Has Lease, where the sister ship blows up but that's caused by something external. So I think what they're getting at is the computer's not just broken down off its own.
This is the computer who's actually gone mental itself.
Yeah.
Which makes me think of the Practical Joker.
Yeah.
Well, wondering if they're also getting away with a bit of kind of wordplay that it's a system-wide error as opposed to just a system going down.
Practical Joker had just about fit in at 79 years.
Yeah, because if we're counting holodeck malfunctions, then whoa. I reckon they have a separate report for them. It's like, right, how many computer errors are there? 65 million. How many computer errors that are not holodeck malfunctions? 4. You know, I reckon it's a bit. Yep. Starfleet will have a separate report for that, like, because it's not worth putting in the real stats.
This is talking about the entire computer system.
Yeah.
Is gone down, not just one system. This is a complete system failure.
Yeah. And then they get Stubbs in and they tell him, oh, well, he barges his way in and they say, well, you might as well stay, Doctor. And they say, well, we might not be able to stay and see the interstellar phenomenon. And he's like, I'd rather die than abandon my work. And then Counselor Troy chirps in and she says, his nonchalance is studied and practiced. And then Picard, making it just canonical, says to her, yeah, I can tell that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, all right, why do you have her in these briefings?
Yeah.
You also open it up with, that discussion of him saying, it's like, well, could you just get out of my head and stop with that shit? Which, first of all, is like, what, is it like a switch? You know, that seems weird, because, like, you can't tell if you sense a smell. Like, they've suggested before you can, but, like, and the other bit of that is that he also, as soon as he leaves the room, when he's going, well, do you mind? That's a bit invasive. She's going, it's like, right, this is what he was thinking the whole time. Well, is there no, like, I mean, I think it seems weird that she can turn it off, which they've suggested in other episodes she can. I always found that weird. Like, you can't turn off your other senses. But
no.
It's also the fact that, yeah, the second he leaves, it's like there's no Hippocratic Oath to, or, you know, whatever, contracting as ace.
It doesn't matter, because as Picard points out, everyone could tell. It's like, what were that one we watched recently where they went, whoa, he's very arrogant, and like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Where no one has gone before, wasn't it? Where he's like, I'm fucking shit at warp engines, and she goes, bit up his own ass, him.
Like, it does get me where... he goes, like, I'd rather die than leave. And Picard turns around and rightly so goes, well, I think you'll find most of the crew will actually agree with your sentiment on that.
Yeah, sorry. No one's bothered about your egg.
Like, okay, he's got a scientific experiment. He wants to test something. But it's explained what he's testing. He's looking at the decay flow, decay rate of the neutrons that are given off from this. But it's never explained what is this going to accomplish by him knowing what the decay rate is.
No, they just give that vague, it'll propel our understanding by, it's going to open up so many doors.
Yeah, but it didn't sort of like said, yeah, if we know this, we can harness this power.
It'll do this. Yeah, no, I think it was just one of them. Help us understand stuff better.
Let's be fair, this is a neutron star, so a dwarf star, a tiny star. Perhaps this is the start of a protostar technology.
Oh, go on, man. Ooh. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I love, but it's another thing which they just don't quite shore up in the episodes. Like, I mean... I like the fact that they show a relationship between him and Wesley, Wesley's kind of learning from him. And I would have, it would have been nice to see that kind of joy he later shows all throughout this episode. Again, why not have him excited? No. Like, yeah, you can still have him being a bit of an asshole about it, but he's obviously got a glee for what he's doing. So why not show that?
Now, this is an interesting theory I've got, which is totally not covered at all in this episode at all. But we know that Wesley becomes a traveller and he says in Prodigy he doesn't know what he's doing all the time or why he does things. What if he's working subconsciously in this episode because he creates a new species?
He does, yeah.
He's there to That's help good. Them get on to sort it and to witness the birth of the new... work out how to this energy from this neutron star, which is the birth of the protostar, and it's all towards Prodigy. And we don't know what the nanites are for.
Oh, that is good. I did not tie all that together, it's funny because I thought something
it ties together.
But it's kind of, I sort of thought of something along similar lines, but I didn't get all that. But it's like, I thought at one stage, because you get the scene between Guinan, if I can bring that one up now. And it's like, there's a bit near the end of that, because like the fact that, like you say, he births a whole life form, which would be so silly if there wasn't for the fact that you've already established a genius, you've already had the Traveler in there saying he's meant to create a thing. So when he does something preposterously genius, it's like, no, they've laid the groundwork. That's... like, you know, when they just do it with a character randomly, it's like, oh, sorry, I accidentally created life. It's like, I mean, I like that when Gonan was saying, it's like, the Frankenstein bit was quite cute, but then it was when she goes, like, he's going, it's like, I'll step forward and say something if it proves it's nanobots. And she goes, what do you think you're going to get for this project? It's like, always get A's. Yeah, sorry, I've accidentally invented another life form. I do this every day. I'm such a genius. Fine, I'll admit it with me. It's like, and it isn't like he's being braggadocious, but it's kind of quite funny. It's like, I'm going to make these new life forms.
What's interesting, she goes, what grade will you get? And he goes, I always get an A. And it's almost like he's fed up of always getting A's, no matter how shit he does at summer. or how little he's trying at summer, it does something in it. Like this one, he's getting nowhere with his experiment. He thinks he's fallen asleep.
Yeah.
And then he's created a new life form and he's going to get an A from it.
Look, if you always get an A, how about you don't create a life form that endangers the ship? Just do some crap and get an A. It's fine.
I can even build on it with what Elliot's saying. Also, he creates this thing, and in the Lower Decks episode, you've got the giant D20. We know that he plays tabletop like Will Wheaton.
Oh, yeah.
It all comes together. Yeah, do you think that was a really, really specific back reference they never actually say?
Who knows?
Night Rose.
Who knows? Rose says goodnight. Rose, yeah.
Night
big
us.
Thanks. Great show. Blessings and greetings until next time. Night, night. Sweet dreams.
Night, night.
Love, hugs, joy to all. Or words to that effect. Sorry, just for anyone who's on audio.
Been very positive, Rose. Yeah. That was very nice. Yeah. Well,
Rose
so
lovely. Thank you, Rose.
He's made these nanites and ultimately does admit to it. And this is where Stubbs is like, right, well, we're going to kill him then, aren't we? Let's get him killed. He goes around sabotaging stuff to get him killed, even though they said, no, we need to find out what's going on. I'm going to go sabotage shit.
There's only one answer, kill him.
And he's just so, this is the thing, this is my point. He's so all over the show. One minute he's being nonchalant, the next minute it's like, I'll die with this fucking ship if I have to, with all of you on board. And now he's like a psycho killer on it. Like,
it's all to get his experiment done.
I know the motivation, but his character doesn't have a through line. It just goes one area and then he's being a mentor to Wesley. It's like
this kid that you've taken a liking to, and bearing in mind you're a scientist, has created a new form of life, and you're not even slightly interested in that. You're just like, kill him.
Kill them all. I want my sensor readings.
Yeah, I mean, if he'd been a super kind of like really excited about his experiment all the way through, he takes Wesley under his wing, whatever, and then he's got this choice between what Wesley's created, which is new life, it's exciting to science, or the thing he has hung his dreams on all the way, like through his, like for years, like this is one magnum opus achievement. And then he's faced with his choice and he's about to make the wrong decision. You could even have Wesley coming in and like going and say, man, I thought you loved science. And
that would have been so much better to juxtapose like my big discovery again, that, you know, your big discovery could stop my big discovery, but both of them are good for science. That would have been a much more interesting
and a stronger through line. This, as I say, it's just all over the place.
It's almost like it's two episodes bashed together. Usually we get an A plot and a B plot, but in this they're intermingled.
It's all together.
You've got scientist, ship's in danger, scientist doesn't want them to leave, and you've got Wesley creates nanites, and they could have been two separate episodes.
And I just want to say for a second there, Willow perfectly lined up her ears above my headphones. Sorry, it was hilarious. If anyone can screen grab that,
we'll screen grab it so you look like Batman.
Just
me.
It's great.
And so they attack Stubbs. Stubbs attacks them, but then they attack him. And then Data, it's all wrapped up very, very quickly. It's Data, I'll be a conduit. Oh, hello, we're the nanites. We come in peace. Oh, we come in peace as well. Right, let's all be friends.
We didn't realize we were causing you problems or anything.
It was quite fun to have, Data's always the one which the creatures speak through. Like, that's almost a next generation trope in itself. Like, they've got a few episodes.
Well, it's becoming a MacGuffin, hasn't it? That you've got to for the creatures to talk through.
And in this one, it's very logical because he's an artificial life form and they're an artificial, so it makes sense. And they also got, right, Stubbs, you apologise to them, since you've been killing them. Right on.
I like how he's all the way through. You've got, like, the last time we saw him before this is He's lying in sickbed. They've nearly killed him. And he's there. You've got to kill them. You must kill them. Kill them. And then next time we see him, he's called to bridge. And Picard goes, say sorry. He goes, okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Again, no consistency. And he's a great actor. This is the thing. He is so wasted. He could have, like, it's not like he's an actor who couldn't have given a better performance.
No, absolutely.
It's like there's a lot of stuff leading up to the end that didn't need to be there.
And yeah.
And then they tried to wrap it all up in 5 minutes.
Which they do wrap it all up. And then to the extent that, you know, Stubbs finishes his experiment and we see Wesley going on what's probably a date.
Well, we get the nanites fix the ship in record time.
Yeah.
So Stubbs' experiment can happen. And then we're going to take the nanites to their own planet.
We're going to give them a planet.
We found a planet they can have that has no life and the minerals that they need, which I'm assuming the minerals that are on this planet are obviously highly essential to computer cores because the nanites are eating specific things in the computer
core.
So this is probably a really valuable planet. But we're just going to put the nanites there to eat it.
Yeah, it's a silicon planet.
Yeah.
I'd also I know I made allusions to it, but the scene where he is talking about baseball, I just think it's a great example of how he's a great actor, just misused. Because it's like the way he talks about it goes like a fast culture who couldn't make time for this. Like fast culture and fast food were all that mattered to them. They couldn't make time for this national park. He just talks very nicely about it.
It's a nice speech.
It's lovely. And I want to see more of that. Like, why not?
I do find it quite funny that he goes, it's how I treat myself after an hard day. I sit there and think about baseball scores. Like,
I just play.
You imagine, I've had such a difficult day. 3-0. 4-0. Brilliant.
You know how many times Cisco was like, sorry, Casty, I'm just stuck at a meeting. Go straight to his quarters to think about baseball. I'm sorry. He's not the
Owner. Just sits there. Oh, third innings. They scored 6. You what?
Hey, scientist from that episode. I was just thinking about that. Oh, you too? Cool.
They have like a group chat. How about next Wednesday, we both sit there and think about the same game at the same time? Like, yes. Good idea, Benjamin.
You've also got, like, this is so rife for a fan episode, book, whatever, because you've got Wesley says, it's like, yeah, my dad told me about baseball. So there could have been, like, sometime when Jack Crusher and a young Captain Sisko or Ensign Sisko or whatever might work together and talk baseball. Like, that would have been fun.
That would have been cool. That would be fun. Yeah.
But what's mad about this with Stubbs going, I go in there, I look at the stats and imagine the game. We've established holidecks by now and how
well Wesley asks him. Wesley says, do you watch it on a holodeck? No, I just think about it.
Yeah,
which is fine if that's your entertainment, but I just imagine you'd want to wind down a little bit better. It's the way he says, that is my treat. It's sitting there thinking about stats.
Yeah, we've got the baseball game. We've got holodeck. We can recreate it. We can recreate the players. We've got the stats of how the game played. I could go sit there and enjoy watching them. Nah, I'm just going to read the stats.
Do you know what? They could have even made that work better if they just said it, like, tied it into his science. So it's like he loves to do science in his head. Like, he's such a genius. He sees things, you know.
Yeah.
If they tied it back, there was a reason for him doing that. But otherwise, like you guys say, it's like, why don't you watch it then if that's the case?
Yeah.
It has to be a good reason why that's possible to him.
I think it's implied the fact that he sits and just does it in his head from the stats, that he is such a genius, he can do that.
Yeah.
It's not played well.
If it's got to relate back, or even when he's doing that, it frees his mind up for science. Like, again, a reason for us to care why he does, and like, as opposed to it just thrown in there for no good reason.
Yeah, it's obviously meant to show that he's such a genius that he can just play in it.
Yeah,
That is just the stats and can watch the game.
Just by contrast to this, there's an episode of The X-Files where Mulder says pretty much the same thing, that he can just read stats and enjoy it and imagine the game.
Yeah.
But it's the speech he makes is far better written. So maybe just as a contrast, check out that episode of The X-Files, The Unnatural, it's called. I want to say season 6, but that's not a hill I'll die on.
Just to check here, Mulder doesn't have a holodeck, though.
He doesn't.
I don't remember him having one. I'm just checking.
There's probably
a waterbed later on, though.
There is an episode of The X-Files where there's a holodeck. One of the episodes written by William Gibson, I think, had a holodeck. It's not the greatest episode. Anyway, the point I was originally going to make about all of this, that it's resolved quickly, is that Stubbs is allowed to finish his experiment, so he doesn't get in trouble for killing nanites.
No.
And Wesley doesn't get in trouble for letting nanites escape and creating a new life form that nearly destroys the ship. You know, I just think it's a very forgiving episode, this one.
And the nanites go nanite.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that pun. I thought it was playful.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
And the episode wraps up with Beverly.
What I'll do is, if you write that pun down,
yeah,
I'll read it tonight to relax and I'll enjoy it all over again. Yeah. Sorry, Elliot.
No, I was saying that the episode just ends with Beverly whinging to Guinan and Wesley never has fun.
Yeah, it was basically we've got
great. And then he comes in and she said, "Oh, great, he has got friends." Oh no, he's got a girlfriend. Now I'm turning back into mother protective. Yeah.
And we never see that woman again. So Beverly take care of her.
Let's be fair here. Wesley has not got a good track record of second dates.
No, I mean, that's fair.
I will, like, you know, he got his best dating advice from Geordie LaForge, though, so bear that in mind.
Yeah.
Like, there is an episode where he asks him, and, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, and I don't, I kind of quite like the idea of, because Crush is back, she's asking after Wesley, that's fine, but it's just, it doesn't seem to land, really, either. There's so much stuff which doesn't
land. Yeah, it's like
the earlier scene with her and Picard was quite nice, but I didn't need this one at the end. It's like,
yeah, don't make her into this domineering mother sort of thing. Nah,
it was like
not the greatest, not the strongest start to the season.
You definitely would not get an episode like this nowadays as your season premiere.
No,
let alone Star Trek.
One thing I did want to throw in, which we haven't said yet, it's right at the beginning of the episode, just because of the kind of up-res on Netflix, which looked great. I thought, like, everything looks crystal clear. You can see the acne all over Will Wheaton. Like, his face is right up to the camera.
Yeah.
And because it's so clear now, it's like, oh, you poor bastard. Like, you can never see that originally.
I tell you what I will call out, though, for being really good. The effects of the Enterprise with this in the stellar phenomenon still hold up. Because it was done as practical effects.
Yeah, they do. I mean, to be fair, there has been a little bit of upgrading. But yeah, primarily the effects do look great still.
Like right through TNG, DS9, Voyager. And one of the reasons Star Trek does hold up is the effects hold up
because effects. I agree.
And anything that's physical effects holds up.
And I think
apart from some BBC programs.
Yes.
And I think for most of the Next Generation, the up-res has looked like, you know, when they have tinkered with the special effects, it looks more in keeping. I don't like it when they did it with the original series. They just look so jarring against the rest of the film.
Yeah, it's. I think.
And then film stock, not films, before anyone says.
Yeah, I'd have preferred them just to remaster it that. Like, I know what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
But no, we need... Nah, it's not right.
There's a bit where they show stuff in space and then they zoom in and it's clearly different. It doesn't look like the same.
Yeah. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. Anyway, we'll wrap up there then for this week. We will be back next week to talk about
episode four of Lower Decks
and wherever that leads us. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on Twitter. We are RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Watch the back catalogue, and at some time in the future, probably around Christmas, there'll be an unboxing of Quartz Ship.
Fantastic. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, as I said last week, like you don't know, you handsome bastard. We've been talking Twin Peaks still. So we've just finished our look back at the original show with part two of season two. Please do check that out on youtube.com/DrSquee. And this next week, which we have to sort out a date, we're going to be talking about Firewalk With Me, the movie, which is kind of a prequel. And the missing pieces a bit less so. We'll kind of quickly dive into that.
Yeah,
is kind of the deleted scenes. There's a couple of really interesting ones, but mainly it's the completest in me that involved us watching this.
It's about to get weirder on the Twin Peaks coverage, if such a thing is possible. Oh,
and then we're into The Return, so fucking hell. Yeah, we're going to do the movies this week, then The Return. That's going to get some weird shit.
So, thanks for trekking with us this time, and we will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Drag on and look after yourselves.
Fascinating.